You are listening to the Brooklyn Culture Jam. This is Dan Kinch. Welcome back. I hope everybody's having a good evening. We have on the line with us, Mark Nason is a professor of African American Studies and History at Fordham University and director of Fordham's Urban Studies Program. He's the author of 6 books and over 200 articles on African American history, urban history, and the history of sports. Dr. Nason comes to us tonight to talk about the changes to public education that have been happening under the Cuomo administration, specifically the addition of more testing under Common Core, as well as the administration's efforts on behalf of the charter school movement. He and many other veteran educators are advocating for fighting these changes. We welcome him here tonight. And let's see. Are you with us? Are you with
us,
sir?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I'm here.
I'm sorry, one twin was talking, one twin was not. Welcome, sir. How are you doing?
Okay, I'm good.
Okay, let me start with an article that you just put on your blog, End of Democracy in the New York State Assembly. Give us some background on that article and tell me why you're in this fight.
Well, I've been involved with trying to resist test-based school reform ever since the community history projects I was doing in Bronx schools were pushed out when the New York City Department of Education started rating schools and grading them on the basis of student test scores. When they started doing that, what basically happened is schools in the Bronx, which feared being closed because of low test scores, removed everything creative from their curriculum and turned the entire school experience into nothing but test prep. And, that was about 7-8 years ago. And this whole emphasis on testing to rate teachers and schools has been continuing, and now the governor is ratcheting it up. It's utterly disastrous. They say it's going to help the children in low-performing schools. It actually widens the gap, because what you end up doing is when you have a school where students, don't score well, the teachers just come under such pressure that they eliminate recess, they eliminate the arts, they eliminate community history, and just drill, drill, drill. And it makes kids hate school and, takes the spark of creativity and smothers it.
Now,
so, yeah.
And this is part of a larger picture, not only of testing, right? We're talking about Andrew Cuomo and charter school movement as well.
Right. Well, what's very interesting is the charter school movement started out as a way of promoting experimentation within the public school system, but it became hijacked by big money interests and now has become a vehicle to create an entirely alternative school system free from public control. And their model is New Orleans, where now, 90% of the schools are charter schools. But charter schools not only don't have to have the same norms as public schools in how they deal with teachers, they don't have to follow the same norms in dealing with students. So they routinely expel or push out students who don't perform well in tests. They have extremely restrictive discipline policies that violate, basic civil liberties of students. And the result of this is that you have this alternative school system, which is presented as the solution to problems of underachievement in poor neighborhoods, which ends up creating what I would call a prison-to-prison pipeline, because Many of the charter schools have zero tolerance disciplinary policies and prison-like atmosphere. But here's the rub. Why do charter schools decide to attack public schools and deluge them with testing? A very interesting thing happened in New York City about a half a year ago, when New York City, for the first time, lifted a hiring freeze in the public schools, which had been in effect ever since the economic crisis. Right. There was a huge group of charter school teachers who immediately wanted to transfer to public schools because they couldn't stand the abusive conditions they had in charter schools. So basically, charter schools need to undermine public schools to hold on to their teachers.
Okay. Now, my understanding is there are some other issues with charters as well regarding tenure and building protection and so forth. Is that something you want to address right now? Or
I mean, charter schools don't have to have unionized teacher forces. They are exempt from the labor relations laws that affect public schools, which means that they can have a longer school day. It means that they can have hiring at will. It means that they can eliminate teacher tenure. And as a result, you have a huge churn in the teaching force of charter schools. Teachers come in, work in there for a year or two, can't stand it, and leave. So this, to me, is no model for education, because children thrive on the kind of relationship building that takes place in schools that extends beyond the time you're in a particular class. And children in high needs communities, you know, need that relationship building more than ever. They're not getting it in the charter schools. What they're getting is, you know, relentless test prep and long hours, which is somewhat helpful to the families in the short run, but in the long run, you're not having that relationship with teachers that's, you know, a lasting force in young people's lives.
But now, can I jump in here for a minute?
Sure.
One of the things that critics say is, with Americans testing so poorly relative to our international neighbors from, say, South Korea or Finland, or even, you know, even the poorest countries in Central Europe, something has to change. What is it about the status quo that is defensible?
What's indefensible is that we have the highest child poverty rate in the advanced world except for Romania. And as Diane Ravitch has pointed out, if you control for child poverty, our schools perform, you know, at the very top of the pyramid. In other words, the schools in middle class and upper middle class communities compare favorably in their test scores with those in Finland or South Korea. Those countries have much lower rates of child poverty. The idea that we're going to use schools to narrow gaps in status, when every other economic indicator is widening those gaps, housing policy, wage policy, health care, it's insane. And what it means is we've decided that schools are going to be our vehicle to combat rampant inequality. And when it doesn't work, who do we blame? The teachers.
So
that's where the problem is, I think. It's asking schools to do something they're not equipped to do.
So lay out for me, there was an article in the New Yorker last year about the initiative in the Newark Public Schools that was funded by Mark Zuckerberg, over $100 million to make Newark a model of education in the United States. It has not succeeded. Talk to me about what, in your view, would be the issues with something like that.
They're not, if you want, there's no model that will work if you don't do something about housing, if you don't do something about income, if you don't do something about health care, and you don't do something about, you know, youth recreation and opportunity. There is no way. I mean, the New Orleans was defined as this model for educational reform in low-income communities. Arne Duncan said the best thing that ever happened to New Orleans was Hurricane Katrina, because it allowed us to reinvent the school system. Well, guess what? On test scores, the New Orleans school system came in 67th out of 75 school districts in the state of Louisiana, which is not exactly a pinnacle of high achievement among states. There, I don't care how much money you spend on schools, you are not going to equalize conditions between people who are living in apartments with three and four families are crowded together, where the lights are being turned off and the gas is cut off, where people can't make a living, where they're under constant stress. The schools cannot become a surrogate for our unwillingness to really deal with poverty and inequality holistically.
Okay, and let me jump in there for a moment, because one of the reasons we're having this conversation right now is I was invited to protests out in Long Island, which is obviously has a much higher median income, and mm-hmm. the protest is about Common Core and the testing regime. Would you like to address that?
I mean, Common Core is part of this whole effort to try to have some sort of universal system of evaluating student achievement in the society, so we can address where are the weak points and where are the areas where we need to do work. The problem with that is that we already know where the weak points are. You know, it's not rocket science. There's a direct correlation between income and student achievement. And up to 80% of school performance is based on out-of-school factors. So here you have this initiative that's basically funded by Bill Gates, that's top-down, to do something that doesn't need to be done. But it's making people a whole lot of money. And it's expensive. Now, you mentioned to me that you're involved in trying to bring the arts back in public school.
Yes, actually, fair disclosure, I am now working on behalf of a private community organization that's bringing back arts to middle schools in Brooklyn.
So, I think that's a wonderful initiative. The problem is that, you know, the testing is so, A, the testing is incredibly expensive, and B, teachers and school communities are reluctant to have activities that don't directly contribute to raising test scores if they're going to be penalized for those scores. And that's the frightening thing about the Cuomo proposals. Any school which is has low scores over a long period of time is basically being threatened with being taken into receivership by the state and quite possibly replaced by a charter school.
But
so
now,
you're approaching a middle school, let's say in East New York. They would like nothing more than to have wonderful arts programs for their students. But they're terrified that they're going to be shut down if their kids don't, you know, prep for tests all the time. That's the tension that we have now. That's what, you know, I was doing community history projects in over 20 Bronx schools. The average one lasted 2 months. It was an incredible experience that brought together parents, teachers, students, you know, the lunchroom staff, community leaders, remarkable experience. And once the schools felt the pressure of having to raise their test scores or else they were going to be closed, they told me, Mark, we love this, but we can't afford to do it. Because if we don't really, you know, spend all our time preparing for the tests, our school won't even be there. Under Michael Bloomberg, 168 schools were closed in New York City.
Now, and yet, you talk about what's going on under Andrew Cuomo, and yet he continued, this year he was up for re-election, and he continued to receive support from people like Working Families Party.
That's one of the most, the strangest paradoxes that you can imagine. They didn't support him because of his education policies. They supported him because they were basically frightened that a Republican would get elected and start to do what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin. I think their reasons were not so much that they supported everything that Cuomo did as they were terrified of what would happen if a Republican, they had a Republican governor in New York State.
Now, you mentioned Mike Bloomberg earlier, and there's been a series of articles starting with the last year of his administration in places like The Village Voice about the actual lack of success of the Bloomberg administration in terms of turning around education, even after he got all of the things from the state legislature that he wanted. Can you expand on that?
You can't turn his the whole idea that you can make schools in high poverty communities function as well as those in affluent communities is a fool's errand. I mean, there are schools in New York City which where the PTA raises $1 million a year, where they bring in art and music teachers and, you know, all kinds of enrichment activities. And there are schools where you can't even get people to come to a PTA meeting, not because they don't want to, but because they're working two or three jobs to pay the rent. When you look at what's going, the living conditions in New York City, we have these luxury towers going up where half of the apartments are owned by foreign investors who don't even live in them. And then in the Bronx, you have people doubled and tripled up living in homeless shelters. Are you really expecting the children of those families doubled up and living in shelters, you know, to perform at a high level in the schools they attend?
Well, I remember.
It's not, I mean, you can make things a little better, but there are no miracles in education. And education cannot be, you know, the vehicle to combat inequality as deeply rooted in the current American policies as it is. Look at something like stop and frisk. I mean, look at the kind of arrests for marijuana possession. All of these are targeting young people of color living in poor communities. The psychological effects of these policies are profound. And you're blaming the teachers when the kids are coming in stressed out, fearful, without sleep, without enough to eat, and that they're not going to ace the tests? This is crazy. Anybody who worked in those schools would have some empathy for what the kids are going through every day. Erasing those experiences and blaming the teachers is, you know, it's just insane.
Dr. Nason, I wanted to note again, and you already brought it up, that you were in charge of the Bronx African American History Project.
Right.
And that's a collaborative project that was done with the Bronx Historical Society starting several years ago. And I'm bringing that up because in a vision of, let's say, what is possible, if by some miracle you were put in charge of improving the schools of the Bronx, where would you go? What would you start with?
Okay, I would use the community school concept and make the schools round-the-clock community centers. I would give many of the schools exemption from state tests and bring in arts and community history programs. I would make sure that I would have community gardens. I would have community farms. I would make these places centers of excitement and creativity for children, and a place where they feel safe and nurtured and loved. I would not create an atmosphere of intimidation. I would take out the metal detectors. I would sharply reduce the testing. It would be an enriched arts, science, and history-centered experience and a place where everybody in the community is welcome. And I would also make sure the kids got plenty of exercise because there's a huge health and obesity problem in the Bronx. But no one has ever asked me to actually take a school or take a couple of schools and implement this vision. I've written about it many times. Every school in the Bronx, as far as I'm concerned, would have a farm. You know, every school in the Bronx would have amazing art and music programs. But nobody's going to ask me.
Okay, Plan B, if you can't do it, who do you have any faith in being able to do something even close to what you're suggesting?
No one. I think that until this whole test fixation crashes and burns, which I think will take 5 to 10 years, no one is going to do what I suggest. You can't, because the expense and the pressure coming from the federal and state governments to have these tests be the center of school experience is so overwhelming that even schools who would want to do what I'm suggesting, and there are a lot of them, can't. First, you've got to get the boot off the necks of the teachers and principals and school districts before you can unleash the creativity. I think it's going to happen, but it's going to have this whole system self-destruct and the pendulum swing.
Well, it sounds like from what I'm reading of, American science students scoring 17th in the international community, we're already at crash and burn.
Oh, no, it could be it's going to get worse.
And how do you see that? What would be?
Well, basically, you're making kids hate school. They're going to, their attendance is going to plummet. There's going to be more violence. The best, and every teacher is going to leave with any sense of self-respect, especially in the high poverty neighborhoods, because they're not prepared to work under humiliating conditions with the way they're being observed and rated on tests. So it can get a lot worse.
Well, I was hoping for a little bit more hope. We are heading into the holiday weekend, but that's...
There is hope, but first, look, to me, what's happening in education is the worst bipartisan policy we've had since the Vietnam War. It took 10 years to get us out of Vietnam. It's going to take 10 years to change these policies. When these policies are changed, there's going to be a tremendous amount of goodwill and creativity unleashed.
Okay, Dr. Nason, we are out of time. Give people your website. Give some people some information about how to get more involved in this issue.
Okay, I have a blog called with a Brooklyn accent, one word, .blogspot.com. If you want to be involved in, there's a great organization in New York called Change the Stakes that is involved with trying to limit the disaster of testing in New York State. It's called Change the Stakes. They have a Facebook page, and you could probably have a website. I definitely recommend working with them.
Okay, and with that, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back on this, sir.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure,
bye-bye. This was a lot of fun. Okay, bye-bye.
You are listening to WBCU. That was fun. You are listening to WBCR. This is Brooklyn Culture Jam Radio, and that's about it for the evening. And that wasn't the music that was supposed to come up. I wish everybody a good holiday period. We're going on spring break. I will not be here next Thursday. Neither, to my knowledge, is anybody else. I'm setting up for my friend Phil Rosenberg, who will be in shortly. In the meantime, I thank you all for listening. And catch up with me on the Brooklyn Culture Jam page in Facebook. And thanks for listening.